You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Kia ora koutou, it's 11 on Sunday. You're listening to Art Bank.
No mai, haere mai everyone, and welcome to Art Bank on a Sunday. Great to have you here. We've got a cool little show lined up. We've got Thomas Pound in the studio talking about his new show, Without Words, A Year Out Walking. Welcome to the studio, Thomas, and we're looking forward to talking to you later in the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
We've also got Indra Neville and Chris Cudby from Sonic Comic, an upcoming project that's being launched in next week at Audio Foundation.
Cool.
Hi.
Hello. It's got a good show. We've got going to have some good interviews, I think.
Yeah, we're talking sculpture, we're talking a little bit of audio stuff, a little bit of comic stuff. There should be a few laughs and a bit of information as well. So, just stay tuned for the next hour. A lot of art talk. We might have Rachel coming into the studio as well to have a little chat about something else, a little surprise. Anyway, until then, I've got a little tune for you. It is
Vogue Model by Maple Syrup off their brand new album, Who is Maple Syrup? Wellington-based band. So that was a bit of Maple Syrup. Up now we've got Indra Neville and Chris Cudby, whose project Sonic Comic, which they've worked on with Beth Duckling Monster, is going to be launched this coming week. Do you want to give an introduction to the project? Or introduce yourselves as well?
Hey, my name is Chris Cudby.
And I'm Indra Neville. And together with Beth Duckling Monster, we are the editors of the Sonic Comic, which is a collection of about 35 single works which have both a comic and a sound element. So it's a book, a beautiful book the size of a record with the comics in it. And when you buy the book, you also get a download code and you listen to the track and you read the comic at the same time. And it's a fully immersive kind of multimedia experience, and it's weird and beautiful and glorious and nutty. And we're also having an exhibition of sort of related sort of detritus, and that's all happening at the Audio Foundation next Saturday at 7 p.m.
Yeah, and Sonic Comic, it features 35 artists from around New Zealand as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of whom have music and comic practices.
Yeah.
So is it finding this correlation that led to the creation of the book or the project?
Well, there's a few things. So Chris, yeah, Beth and I are all people who make comics and make music. And we know lots of other people who also make comics and make music. So it's not really that sort of strange or a bigger deal to us. But I kind of started noticing that, you know, there was a New Zealand comics discourse that totally excluded this kind of group of comic makers. And that kind of made me a bit grumpy, because to me they're some of the most interesting and creative and innovative sort of comic slash musicians that there are. And so that was a reason for me wanting to do the project. And Beth and Chris kind of had the same idea simultaneously.
Yeah.
And luckily we knew each other, so it was, you know, made sense for us to pool our resources and our drive and our talent and do it together rather than three separate projects.
Yeah, I think that this is an idea that's probably been bubbling in all of our heads for a little while.
Yeah.
From my perspective, I was working at the Audio Foundation at that time, and I was just kind of thinking of potential projects that, yeah, I'd like to be involved with. And I mean, we see each other on the regular anyway, just from going to shows and stuff.
Around.
Yeah. But yeah, as Indra was alluding to, there's been sort of like anthologies or compilations sort of recently in the New Zealand comics sphere, which have been kind of, I guess,
boring.
Well, canon building exercises or something.
Yeah.
And Indra, you did an amazing job with the Three Words project, which was kind of represented a totally different cross-section of comics practice in New Zealand. So, I mean, growing up, I'd see all these amazing comics made by musicians and zines and things like that, like really awesome people like David Mitchell or Chris Knox and things like that. But that was never really...
Yeah.
It's always been quite dispersed.
Never included in the New Zealand competent comics canon. I mean, you know, Theo, that I'm just sort of on a zealous mission to sort of smash the competent boy comics scene in New Zealand. And Three Words was kind of phase one and successfully concluded. And Sonic Comics a little bit
project.
Like a phase two for me. Not that I'm obsessed or anything. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I mean, Beth had been doing amazing work with her own work, and also through putting together these really incredible, deep and meaningful compilations, which were really great snapshots of contemporary
music,
experimental or whatever music going on around New Zealand.
Yeah, she's rad.
And what is it that you think causes this connection?
The music comics connection?
Yeah, what actually...
Yeah,
because you must have theories after thinking so much about it.
Theories is a very grand word.
Hypotheses.
Yeah,
theses.
For me, I think there's a kind of person who just has stuff they want to get out of them, and that they use multiple channels to do that. So one of the interesting things about Three Words was that a lot of the women comic makers were also poets or novelists or filmmakers or animators or musicians, in a way that sort of the famous competent boy comic makers in New Zealand aren't. And there are a whole lot of other people like that I know. And so I think there are people who just want to get stuff out, and they want to use multiple channels to do that because different types of media offer different opportunities for expression. And music and comics... That particular marriage, I guess, for want of a better word, is just one that has always been around me and that most of my friends are deeply involved in. Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because it seems to be like kind of like a thing that kind of, from my perspective, kind of like intersects, and then like the two areas will kind of drift off and then they'll like smash together again or something. So you've got like, sometimes you've got like a wave of all these noise musicians who'll be doing like really gnarly comics or something. And your Indra was involved in the Hamilton music scene, which was very comics centric, especially compared to say Auckland, which is like not really so much.
And Hamilton was really interesting too. So kind of in the late 90s, the sort of rampant, terrifying street gang that I was a part of, we made comics, but there was an equivalent called Plop who made music, but they were all the same people, you know, and both did both. I think there is a kind of a punk DIY thing that particularly attracts both, because comics can be and should be quite scumbag and punk, and music as well.
Because they're things that can be made very easily.
That's right, yeah, you can make them anywhere. Yeah.
You can just knock them
need
out.
A pencil.
You can drive them in like when you're in a car.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And then I guess there's that thing too around if you make music, it's quite cool to have images that go along with your music, record covers and t-shirts and that kind of stuff. So there's a pragmatic kind of driver there.
Yeah, because internationally there's this massive relationship between comic art and like scummier scenes like Jaime Hernandez drawing all those punk posters and the Nardcore scene and everything. It's a beautiful
paper
relationship.
Paper rad kind of
thing. Absolutely. Like lightning bolt and stuff like that.
And challenging this, because I think it what you're talking about is almost challenging an idea of monomaniacal genius.
Yeah, totally. And this kind of story around the scumbag punk DIY comics being simply a phase on our way to mature graphic novel type storytelling. That really gets me grumpy, that particular narrative.
I mean, it's deliberate that we're choosing single page. Each artist gets their own page.
Just one page.
To do whatever they want. So it's short form works.
It's proper comics.
No, we've got a song pulled up here, which is an excerpt from the Sonic Comic compilation. Do you want to give an introduction to this? Strange Stains, Hysterical Attitudes.
So, Strange Stains is by Cookie or Amy Stains, who is in the book and is one of those kind of amazing sort of polymath genius types. And she is also going to be playing at the launch of Sonic Comic on Saturday, coming up from Wellington especially. So really worth getting along to see her, as well as all the other amazing stuff. Yeah.
Fantastic. Let's have a listen.
You're listening to Art Bank.
So that was Strange Stains from the upcoming Sonic Comic compilation.
That's a nice little bit of Robert Scott was, there.
Yeah, yeah, from it's nice
to... He's quite famous and he's in our book.
From the Bats and the Clean.
Probably not so famous for his comics, though.
But then you might find out there's like a really specific fan base in like the middle of Australia who are like, the Bats? We haven't even heard of Bats.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, Robert Scott's produced a ton of stuff and he a ton of comics. And he's really only known as a musician, but he's like been an avid zine maker the whole time.
Yeah. So I was wondering one thing we could sort of talk about. With this whole idea of these communities that form, you talked about... Oats and plop and gangs,
like.
Gangs. Let's avoid the term communities, gangs. Hardcore zine and music gangs. But there's something of a split off in between these kind of music scenes and art scenes. And I don't know if you wanted to talk about that, like how you feel that you can spot what's a very apparent crossover in the Venn diagram and kind of maybe try and bring attention to it.
Yeah, I don't know, because as we were saying earlier, for the three of us in this room, there's no split really, you know, comics and music together, self-evident truth, haha. But so it's easy in that respect because you have lots of friends who feel the same way and you form one of those gangs that sits in the middle of the Venn diagram. But communicating what it is that you do, communicating that nexus to people either on the left of you in the hardcore music scene or on the right of you in the hardcore comic scene, that's the kind of challenging bit. I don't think the challenging bit is that that community exists. It's the communicating bit. Because I think, and you might know, Chris, but I think this is the first project of its type kind of in New Zealand, which seems crazy to me. You know, there's been sort of one-off things, people making their own record covers or whatever, but this feels like a new thing, even though it's so obvious.
Yeah, and I think that that's partly because like a place like the Audio Foundation exists where you can actually do this kind of project, whereas previously you'd be maybe working with galleries or bookstores, neither of which this kind of like intersection of art stuff is really their priority in some ways.
And you get those people who are really obsessed with mastering the technical skills of whatever medium they're working in. So you get musicians like that and comic artists like that, and they're really busy, you know, really busy learning to use different thicknesses of pencils and putting different gauge strings on their guitars, and they don't actually have time to sort of muck around in another space, which is totally legitimate and fair enough, but not what I'm interested in.
And when it comes to comics, I know that you and Dara have a lot of thoughts on how you define comics. I don't know if you do, Chris.
Oh, yeah, I've got my own kind of thoughts.
Do you disagree or do you agree?
No, we pretty much agree. And the definition for this project was basically if the person that made it calls it a comic, it's a comic.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, we're calling this publication a comic. So, like, this is a comics context now because we've decided it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And then whatever the artists submit is comics. Yeah. I mean, there's writers like Scott McLeod famously declared that a single image cannot be a comic.
Because like, it doesn't have time. Time is the qualifying
of time,
thing.
Which is like...
Which I disagree with.
I feel like
in his defense, he also quantified it by saying that those sort of definitions are pointless.
Yeah.
But then
it's
still
good to cover your own ass, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but you know.
Yeah, which kind of that rules out like Gary Larson things and stuff like that. But I think like it's a really hazy boundary, and I think it's really defined by context more than anything else.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, because you know, like, there's definitely single page images in here, but the artists have called it a comic, and I'm cool with that. I'm cool with them.
If someone had said my comic is just getting an extra track on the CD, how would that have...
We would have thought that was really quite cheeky and cool and probably said...
Because it would have messed up your whole numbering system.
Would it have
messed
up? They would have to go at the end.
Yeah.
Okay, so you would have said, yes, you can do this thing that confronts our idea of how a project's going to work, but we're going to make you do it within a very strict set of regulations.
It's called compromise there.
That ended up being perhaps a John Cage kind of scenario, but with comics, I think we would have to allocate a blank page for this imaginary artist.
I think there's a really interesting thing, which is around the variety of ways that people have interpreted the comic audio relationship. So I kind of had this obvious thought that everyone would just draw the lyrics from a song, but that's, I think there's maybe one person that did that. Everyone else has kind of come up with all of these other really quite incredible sort of nebulous conceptual, you know, fun, wacky, sort of precarious in some cases,
yeah,
kind
fully,
of relationships. Yeah. And some things are really tight. Like my comic and my audio makes no sense at all if you haven't read the comic. Whereas there are other things where the audio and the comic pretty much can stand alone, but when they come together, it's a third thing. So I really love that.
And like, I mean, there's artists like Beck Coogan,
yeah,
who like her ones, think about kind of rage at rising property prices and things like
yeah.
that. And she did a comic about using like real estate,
yeah.
kind of drawing over real estate images and turning it into like a little story or
like
something.
Field recordings of goats.
And then she went out to the location and did some field recordings and
yeah.
also kind of turned it into a little bit of a rock opera kind
yeah,
of vibe
yeah.
as well. So
love a good rock opera.
Yeah. And then we have like Dean Ballinger. What he's done is his comic is a series of notes. That is the idea, is that the person reading the comic plays the notes and they're supposed to evoke a particular set of emotions. So that's kind of really interesting as well.
Hmm.
Well, with these kind of practicalities, I am curious, how did you draw on the groups you wanted to bring into it? What was your actual process
yeah,
for that?
Yeah, we just basically sort of wrote down everyone we liked and wanted to invite, really.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It's extremely subjective
totally.
Selection process.
Yeah, and then there are a couple of cases where people approached me and said, oh, we heard you're doing this thing, could we be in it? And I was kind of like, yeah, yes,
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, anyone who was keen, we said yep, so.
Pretty much.
That's it, just added up, it was great.
Mm.
Yeah, and it, I mean, it came from our own, like, communities as
yeah.
well. I mean, like, Beth, Indra and myself, we've all sort of worked
yeah.
in different areas and we all knew different people that we
yeah.
that we either of us weren't familiar with.
Yeah, that's right. So
yeah.
between the three of us, we've got a lot of connections. And just talking on the Hamilton thing, there are an alarming amount of sort of Hamilton Comics alumni in the project. And a lot of that is probably down to me and my
I
sins.
I think it's quite cool.
It's really interesting.
A lot of people I know who are in, like, you know, contemporary art kind of communities, young artist-run space sort of areas who come from Hamilton, if you talk to them for long enough, you'll find out that, like, their background is totally in the hardcore scene.
Mm. Yeah.
And, like, they don't
yeah.
talk about it now and they, like,
yep.
dress, you know, that kind of, like, nice, cool kid Auckland vibe.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
then, like, you realise that actually they were in a really
they
scummy band with
yeah.
three strings and, like,
punk rock Waikato upbringing.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally. And I need to also give a plug for Mark One Comics in Hamilton, who are sponsoring drinks at the launch. And it's
yeah.
totally appropriate given the number of, you know, ruggedly handsome Waikato men and women who are in the book.
Yeah, actually, I was just thinking, just growing up, I was living in Beechhaven where there was absolutely nothing as a teenager growing up, and it's like an hour bus ride from town. And I remember I was obsessed with really nerdy stuff, so which is a surprise. So there was a comic book store down the bottom of town called The Old Bookseller,
oh, yeah.
and it shared a space with Crawl Space
yeah.
Records, which was like the
that
New Zealand
mezzanine.
Kind of noise kind of place. So I think I've always had this connection. In my
yeah, so
the,
actually that's cool. That building's like a Sonic
yeah.
comic, eh?
Yeah, that's
yeah,
right. Yeah.
yeah.
Awesome. Well, we've got another track lined up from Sonic Comic. This is Seven Keys Laser Eyes. Do you want to give an intro?
Seven Keys is an interesting collaboration, actually, by two people who are from Hamilton, go figure. And they are also going to be playing at the launch.
Fantastic.
Auckland's beautiful Te Ngāhere o Woodhill is the backdrop to a new boutique music festival, Oro 17. Legendary UK electronic pioneers Underworld headline, delivering their Coachella-ready set through a jaw-dropping sound and visual setup. Plus internationals DJ Phil Hartnell of Orbital, Dave Seaman, Jerry the Damager, Coven, Faint, Evil Needle, and local soccer practice Greg Churchill and DJ Dubhead. The day-long R18 festival also features gourmet food, beverages and amenities on site, as well as a park and ride service. Don't miss Underworld and the rest of the killer lineup at Oral Music Festival, April 8th, Woodhill Forest. Get tickets now from Ticketmaster.
Welcome. Welcome to the Solar Renewal Workshop.
I'm a bit new to this.
Relax. We are all one with the sun. It renews our energy.
Okay. Do I get nude? Like you?
Yes, yes. I carry the sun's energy. I shall pass it skin to skin.
I'm not sure I'm comfortable with this. I just want a cheaper power bill.
Shh. Don't pull away.
Get renewable energy straight from your solar generating neighbours with P2 Power, New Zealand's only peer-to-peer energy provider. Sign up now at p2power.co.nz.
I really don't see how this will power my fridge.
Questions are all around us.
Why do you yawn when other people yawn?
Learn.
Why am I going bald?
Learn.
What is the Matrix?
Learn.
Is BFM still relevant?
Learn.
Where'd I put my keys?
Here.
Magnets? How do they work?
Learn.
Find out all the answers with Ready, Steady, Learn. Every Tuesday morning with Hannah and a guest expert from the University of Auckland. Ready, Steady, Learn. 9:40 a.m. every Tuesday with Hannah on BFM Breakfast. Thanks to the University of Auckland.
You're listening to Art Bank.
So we are back with Chris Cudbyn and Darren Neville from Sonic Comic. Just before we switch over to Tom with Tom Pound, do you want to give a close up and tell people how they can get their hands on a copy of this book?
Okay, so the sort of easiest way is to go to our Bandcamp page, which is, what is it?
Sonic Comic?
Bandcamp.
Not Sonic the Comic, that's
no,
a different thing.
That's a different thing. So if you go there, you can pre-order a copy of the book. It's $25, which is an absolute bargain. If you come to the launch on Saturday night, 7 p.m. Audio Foundation, you can get your hands on a physical copy of the book, and that comes with the download code for the Bandcamp page.
Yeah, all the books come with download codes. Mm.
So yeah, that launch is on Saturday, this coming Saturday.
That's right.
At Audio Foundation.
Yeah, and yep. Four contributors playing and also a large screening of the Sonic comics and the exhibition opening. So, you know, fun games.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming in and, yeah, make sure you get along to that launch.
Cool. Thank you for having us.
Oh, and I'm just going to jump right in. Tom Chuk talking to Tom Pound. Thomas Newman Pound, you've got the show Without Words, A Year Out Walking at the Gus Fisher Gallery. It's a fantastic show, and I think it's a theatrical show, and people will enjoy it. It's an exhibition, it's a treasury of curial industrial flotsam and jetsam gathered by the artist during 5 years of walks through Auckland's industrial areas, demolition sites, railway lines, and suburban streets. After bringing home his catch, Thomas will consider which objects began when laid out together to speak with one another. They did so without words, of course, and they would pair up in curious ways. So, Thomas, very nice to have you on the show.
Thanks, Tom.
So you've been out strolling the streets, finding these, well, what would you call these objects? A kind of...
Well, I guess it's assemblage, but it's kind of an urban archaeology, really. It started to find a voice when I started making kind of... looking at mythology and religious mythology and the like, and building objects that weren't figurative but had some kind of, if you like, subliminal narrative. Tom, it is funny talking about visual images on an audio program.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
I could say to your audience, Tom, you know, that Tom hasn't changed from his Batman suit last night.
Yeah.
And it's making me rather uncomfortable.
Yeah, well, you just have to paint them a visual picture or sort of assemble them some kind of rusty picture, because they do have this kind of, they've got an oldness to them. They're old industrial objects, and they kind of speak to an era before now, which I guess is actually just rusting away around us. I was sort of wondering what kind of connections you'd have with that sort of era of industrial sort of, I'm thinking about the railways, I guess, and the sort of these kind of times that you would have grown up in, which might be disappearing now.
Yeah, I guess it's that, but it's kind of, I'm not too sentimental, you know, in that sense. Like you wouldn't guess from the show that you know, I like de Kooning and I like, you know, some of the, you know, very much some of the, you know, postmoderns, but this show's very interested in modernism. And so, you know, there's an ode to modernism right through it as well. But what I was looking at really was that, you know, these could possibly be dug up in 20 years and they'd look as though they were fully formed artifacts, you know, as though there were some kind of archaeology or mythology of a past civilization almost. There's a sense that that things are passing and rushing fast, you know, every day. You know, I'm surprised, for instance, by political stuff, like we seem to live war in the abstract, you know, while we're sleeping in our name, drones are dropping bombs, you know, and it's hard when one thinks about these things. So it has become a kind of meditation, if you like.
Mm-hmm. And I guess you have a time for meditation. There's an element of time when you're finding these objects, and this time where you're thinking about them, because walking lends themselves to sort of thoughts and poetic thoughts. Could you tell us about some of the titles of the work, and do you have a specific idea behind each one, or are they...
No, it's a body of work called Without Words, and it was important to me that the audience make their own narrative of it. Like an engineer will see something different, have a different narrative than a poet or a writer or an architect. Architects are fascinated by it, which I really find stimulating, you know, and also I'm quite... you know, I probably read more contemporary literature than I do art theory, even though I'm interested in, you know, both, obviously. And the poetics of storytelling are important to me. Thinking of water today, coming over here, I remember reading, you know, it's quite an old book, but Virginia Woolf, the Waves. Just a remarkable book if you haven't, story if you haven't read it out there, audience. Just based on water and it's kind of from memory, flawless.
Right. Well, very good. And I want to talk to you a bit about this sort of the connection with the theatre, because there is a theatricality to the work, and you've worked as a set designer. Do you sort of, and you've done all the installation yourself, it's a mammoth effort, which you did in 2 days. Did you kind of get some theatrical sparks when you were installing there?
Yeah, the way it was laid out became quite important. Sam from the gallery helped me, was invaluable. But the way it was laid out, I wanted to have a real silence to it, and it's a beautiful room at the Gus Fisher. You know, I couldn't have asked for better. And Linda and Alice have been, you know, bright and considerate and graceful in my work with them. The one I was most charmed about, the critique I was most charmed about, was that it was like walking into some kind of modernist chapel, you know. And I was charmed by that. It's nice to be charmed.
Yeah, it almost reminds me of the roof of the Civic Theatre or something, the way that they're all sort of spaced out. It's quite
now you're being
astral.
Charming, Tom.
Yeah.
I hadn't gone there.
No.
Are you thinking the stars and the sky?
Yeah, the stars and the sky.
I'm really
quite
impressed.
It's quite starry. Yeah.
I'll buy that.
Okay, good. Well, we'll just jump into a little break and we'll play a song after that. What would you like to listen to today, Tom?
What about... it's a choice between Joy Division Atmosphere or Cocteau Twins Song of the Siren.
Okay.
The staff here can call it.
Heads or tails. All right, well, we'll jump into some ads and you'll hear one of those just after that.
So you get home and your car's gone.
Oh, but I just went to Wash World.
And your laptop, which was in your car, is gone too.
My demos!
Ouch. Replacing them means starting a crowdfunding campaign.
Please?
Winning the lottery.
Hello, statistically improbable.
Or avoiding the hassle with AMI Young Drivers and Renters Insurance. They'll keep you covered if your car or contents takes a hit. Plus, they're cheap as. Go to ami.co.nz for more. AMI, right here for students. Conditions apply.
Panaku Development presents the EAR Art and Music Festival at Queen's Wharf. EAR is a free, all-ages explosion of creativity with over 30 local artists, installations, immersive experiences, art exhibitions, dancing, food stalls, and more. Featuring live music from Soccer Practice, Third Eye, Bad Crop with Stay Foolish Band, Lapis and Christoph Altruento, Rizvan, Spoken Word from Jara Rager, and Word the Frontline Pots. Plus your favourite Grow Room DJs, Larson and BFM. Own Bridge. EAR Arts and Music Festival. Free for all, Sunday, March 19th, 12 till 9 at The Cloud on Queen's Wharf.
Alright, mate. Yeah, not bad. Hey, come check out some of these beautiful tracks. I got 96KB MP3s, I got the sick WMA from Zippy Share, some great YouTube rips, some ultra weird Nigerian boogie. Check this.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
No, you're the boss. Hey, how about this?
The Swap Meet, coming up this afternoon from 4 p.m. It's a digger's selection of funk, soul, boogie, jazz and whatever else is in the bag that week. With your hosts, Jupt, Kirk, Ira and guests.
Lay back, take it easy.
I saw this girl in a black Mercedes.
The Swap Meet, Sundays from 4 p.m. on 95BFM.
You're listening to Artbank.
Silence, don't walk away.
You're listening to Artbank.
And you're back on Artbank 95 BFM. Thanks for tuning in this morning, and that's a good one. It's a great one for a rainy day atmosphere by Joy Division, a special request from Thomas Pound, who I'm talking to at the moment. We've been talking about your show, Without Words, A Year Out Walking, which is at Gus Fisher Gallery. And we've sort of talked about how there's not necessarily a definitive narrative behind these pieces, but there are some sort of hints that we're getting from you in this interview. And something that might be a nice little hint and aside would be a little bit of your poetry. So would you like to talk a little bit about this?
Yeah, sure. This is putting, trying to make a kind of soundscape, almost like influenced a bit by War of the Worlds, you know, where people went into a panic and left the house. I wanted to have a kind of haunting narrative. I don't know if it's worked or not. I think it has. Western Prince engineered it. We co-produced it. We did it in his studio. And any music involved, music arrangement is his. I wanted to create a soundscape to put words in as almost like a short story verse poem.
Okay, very good. Here we go, hopefully. Don't know if that's playing.
I called for your hand, caught between the shoreline and the sea. Would I find myself as a view as you of me? Do you remember the sand that day? It was silver and glittered like diamonds. The beads of sweat, phosphorus, dissolving at the touch. You tasted of crimson. You told me as a child you would sleep with a shell and listen to the sea. A quicksand of a kiss. Why would you wake up weeping? I attempt to return, but words lose their meaning at the touch of air. And outside the sea is breathing. The stars are still against a black sky. Do you remember those moments between words when we allowed ourselves to drown? A ship departs a harbor. I hold a streamer as evidence of this memory. You always covered your throat when you laughed. Why would you wake up weeping? I pray that the strands that attach me to what is left to myself remain. And now, years later, your bones are discovered, misread as porcelain after a spring tide. And outside the sea is breathing. And outside the sea is breathing. And above, the stars are still and glittering. It was night. Their eyes swung blind, no watch fires. No jewels above in that dark dome. No breath in that blue and that black. No shadows burnt on earth. It was night. No dreams. No silver upon that sea. No fingertips with which to share the light. It was night. It was night.
So that was a poem by Tom Pound. Does that one have a title?
I'm sure it does somewhere. Was night was one of them. Yeah, yeah. The last one was it was night.
Fantastic. Well, listeners can see some works by you at Gus Fisher Gallery and maybe think about that poem and relate it back. And thank you very much for coming on the show this morning. Any last words before you head on your way?
No, it's been a pleasure, and to your esteemed audience, have a relaxing and dry Sunday.
Oh, very good. You've got a voice for radio, I think, Tom. Now, Rachel, what have you got lined up for the rest of the show?
I've got a track by Ages Power Flip to play here. That's a project by Lucien Magneto Munro, and he is a visual and sound artist from Auckland, and he is playing Breakfast Club for the breakfast show on Friday, this Friday coming up, the 7th. 17th, at Real Groovy. So that's 7 a.m. until 10 a.m. down at Real Groovy, and it's free to go, and you should definitely go along because he's got some really fantastic stuff. It's I've got here, he says it's about regression and ambiguity and sort of, yeah, reversal of progression are the kind of themes that he deals with the most. But it's a really fantastic album called Power Friendship that you can find on Bandcamp. So this is called Negative 9.
You're on Art Bank, and Jazz Show is up next.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.